welcome to another episode of the Last Post Radio Show podcast series. You're with Greg T. Ross, and it's my great enjoyment. That's a word I'll just use out of nowhere because it's true. It's Matt McLaughlin from McLaughlin Battleground Tours. Matt, how are you? And welcome to the show.
Thank you, Greg. I'm going really well. It's great to be on the program.
You've got so much on. It's bless you for sparing the time to educate the public about what you're doing. But today, we've got the great Albert Jacka to speak about. What did Albert Jacka mean to the Anzac spirit? And tell us a little bit about that before we get into some other things about Albert.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Jacka today because he's always been a bit of a hero of mine. He's an interesting character, and I wanted to tell his story. There's a lot of interesting sporting things coming up as well as we head towards Anzac Day. We've got the Anzac tests and things in a number of different sports. And Jacka is very closely associated with sport and athleticism and great achievement. I mean, a lot of that might be more mythology than reality, but that's what we're here to talk about today. But he was certainly one of the heroes of the first AIF, the Australian Imperial Force. So during the First World War, he earned himself Australia's first Victoria Cross of that war and went on to pretty good things. And he was a bit of a rugged hero. And he was a legend both to the men that he served alongside and also to many Australians ever since. So just a really good character to talk about.
Yes, indeed. And look, having done some research on Albert Jacka, who we're talking about today with Matt McLaughlin from McLaughlin Battleground Tours, what a character. I mean, let's start, I suppose. You mentioned there about being the first Australian recipient of the Victoria Cross. Is it true that he was the first Australian to be decorated with the VC during World War One? Is that what happened?
Yeah, that's right. He earned the first one. So he earned the Victoria Cross in May 1915. So, you know, literally 3 weeks after the Aussies had landed at Gallipoli. And so he earned his VC. And I've got to say, one of the toughest VCs that was won during the war. It might have been the first one, but it certainly wasn't the meekest. It was a pretty dramatic struggle that earned him the Victoria Cross. But because of that, because Australia was demonstrating what it could do on the world stage and, you know, fighting, you know, under the glare of the global spotlight at Gallipoli, It was a broadly celebrated achievement for an Aussie to win the Victoria Cross so early in the conflict.
Yes, indeed, Matt. And look, I believe this all happened at Courtney's Post at Gallipoli, understandably there, that there'd been some difficulty there with a group of Turks, and Albert set upon himself to, well, he got rid of the problem, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great way to describe it. And the wonderful thing about Gallipoli is you can stand pretty much in the spot where he earned that Victoria Cross. Today, Courtney's Post is still there. It's marked. The trenches aren't there anymore, but you can stand in the spot and know that you're right where Albert Jacka earned that Victoria Cross. So you've described it well. Basically, the Turks had attacked the Australian positions. There was a very big attack going on, and they'd broken into the Australian lines. And so a group of Turks, probably a dozen or more, were occupying a short section of trench near where Jacka was. He was a corporal at the time, and several men charged forward and tried to take the trench back from the Turks, either by going over ground and jumping into the trench or going through the trenches, and all were killed. So it was considered a suicide mission. The Turks were holding the trench so strongly, but Jacka basically said, "Let me have a go at them," and he jumped in amongst them and shot them and bayoneted them, and then his mates rushed around the corner, and his officer described that Jacka was standing amongst this pile of corpses. He killed seven blokes, and he was standing there with an unlit cigarette hanging out of his mouth. His face was flushed. He was dripping with sweat. And as his officer turned up, he said, "I managed to get the beggars, sir." So it was a pretty heroic action. And for that, he received that Victoria Cross. I tell you what, I never quite understand it, Greg, when I don't know how furious the attack must have been because there were seven guys there that he ended up killing. And, you know, you're not just going to stand there and wait your turn. So I can't imagine what the fighting must have been like when you're taking on seven blokes by yourself and managing to overwhelm and kill all of them. It's unbelievable bravery. Must have been some pretty chaotic scenes in that trench. So little wonder Jacka was pretty worn out when he'd finished.
Well, I was about to say, no wonder he's flushed in the face and everything else. It's just a miracle that he wasn't taken out too. I mean, to think, no wonder he's your hero too, Matt. I tell you what, has there been a movie about Albert, and why not, if there hasn't been?
No, I haven't seen one. I know that Peter Fitzsimons is currently working on a book about him. That's his latest book, so that will be interesting to read. There's been quite a few books written about him, but I think he's well known in terms of people who know about the First World War, but I wouldn't say he's broadly known in the community. So, it's one of those funny ones where people who know the story and who know their history of the First World War will be listening listening to this podcast to go, oh, of course, everyone knows the story of Albert Jacka. But people who perhaps don't know as much about the First World War may be hearing about him for the first time. So a bloke who is a hero and probably should be a bit better known than he is.
Indeed, indeed. And that was my feeling too when I was researching prior to our chat about Albert Jacka, Matt McLaughlin. How did you feel? I mean, yes, he's your hero or a hero of yours. How did you feel standing there at Courtney's Post?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, that's the thing about Gallipoli. Anyone who's been there will know that you really do walk with ghosts at Gallipoli because the terrain is unchanged from 1915. There's still lots of trenches. If you venture off the beaten path, you find, you know, bullets in the ground. And first time I was there, I found a mess tin, an Australian mess tin that someone had eaten their lunch out of before they'd been killed or wounded. So it's extraordinary what you can find. And the Turkish authorities are actually in the process of clearing out sections of trench and cutting the scrub back and leaving the roots still in the ground so that the trenches are preserved, but cutting the scrub off at ground level. And that's really extraordinary because it's revealing these incredibly complicated trench systems that we never realised were there. So, I mean, even just Jacka aside, when you go to Gallipoli, it's pretty incredible to stand in these places and just think about what went on. So, yeah, I always love going to Gallipoli and not least for learning more about the story of Albert Jacka.
Yes, I tell you what, my grandfather fought at Gallipoli, and I guess the feeling about this association with the Australian spirit, and I guess Albert Jack is a good example of that. And I suppose we spoke about earlier the sporting connection here with Anzac Day approaching and Albert's sporting prowess. Now, of course, he did have skills as a boxer, and I guess that was central to Albert's legendary status, Matt. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, it was certainly portrayed as being true. You could argue what value it actually placed on him as a man, but he was certainly a brawler and a tough competitor. And it's the fascinating thing. I've always been fascinated by this link between sport and war, because if you look to the First World War, Jacka was portrayed on posters and with an encouragement to join the Sportsman's 1000 and giving the impression that a battalion was going to be formed just made up of sportsmen.
That's right.
And this indelible link between sport and war. It's always been there. It always exists. And I think in many ways, going to war was seen as the ultimate sporting test because it was man against man on a field of battle and the stakes couldn't have been higher. It was literally life or death. So I think it was seen as the ultimate sporting contest to go off and fight in a war. And during the First World War, there certainly was a very strong link between sport and military service. And military service was obviously a lot more common than it is today. Joining the military was considered one of the key career choices, along with being a doctor or a teacher. If you were an upper class gent, becoming an officer in the army was seen as a fairly good opportunity as far as your career was concerned. And so it's really quite fascinating that there was this strong link, and Jacka became the face of this movement to encourage sports people to enlist. And it was all a bit of a marketing ploy at the end of the day. There was no battalion of sportsmen ever formed, but I have no doubt that people who saw themselves as sporty, and particularly if you're in a upper crust kind of gent who enjoyed a bit of polo and a bit of boxing and a bit of golf, I think you would have seen an opportunity there to join up and potentially fight alongside like-minded chaps and not have to worry about, you know, mixing with the riffraff. As I said, it was all a bit of a marketing ploy. At the end of the day, men who responded and enlisted were just put in whatever battalion was appropriate for them. But I think it certainly worked, having Jacka on these posters and talking about his boxing prowess and the skills as a sportsman that had led to great success on the battlefield. I think it certainly did have an effect on people and encouraged men to enlist who probably otherwise wouldn't have. I think it's debatable. You know, I'm sure there's obvious skills that lend themselves to military service. If you're a captain of a team, you learn about leadership and how to get the best out of people. If you play on a team, you understand the importance of comradeship and working together. So there's certainly elements there that link sport and war. But I think that perhaps during the First World War, they overplayed that slightly.
Yes, look, indeed too, Matt. And I think, as you say, it's all about teamwork, et cetera, on a completely different level. And I suppose that's why the sporting events associated with Anzac Day now are so popular and draw on the Australian spirit. It was all painted as a bit of a boy's own adventure in many ways, I suppose.
Yeah, it was indeed. And it's interesting you mentioned that the link to sporting events has persevered to today. And I would certainly agree with that the major football codes have an Anzac game around Anzac Day. And, you know, we have the Anzac test with New Zealand and things like that. Mm. I think it's interesting that sport is probably the only sort of commercial and entertainment activity that gets away with using the Anzac name in this way. Because if you were a car company and launched the Anzac Ute, or if you were a, you know, a food company that launched Anzac Steaks or something, you'd be well, it's not only frowned upon, but it's also illegal to do it that way. So I think it says a lot about our relationship with sport and its links to the military that these sporting events are really the only ones that are allowed to use the Anzac name as a sort of to promote this sort of activity. But I think you're right. The boys' own adventure in the First World War was a key component of this, that people did, the recruiters did want to make it seem like, you know, it was an adventure you were going off on. It's always important that the sense of duty was always front and center as well. I think we misunderstand slightly when we give this impression that men were naive about what they were going to face. Obviously, no one could have prepared for the scale of the horror of the First World War. No one knew what a terrible conflict it was going to become. But I think we sort of overdo this idea that the blokes were naive and didn't realise what they were getting in for and that they were just going to travel the world and have a great time. Most men had done some measure of military service by the time of the First World War. If you're a young man, you'd almost certainly served in some form of military by that stage. Rifle shooting was the most popular sport in Australia at the time of the First World War. So people were a lot more militaristic. They were used to serving in the military, and they were quite duty bound as well. They felt it was their obligation to go off, and most blokes, when you read their accounts of what they were expecting to face, mentioned death. They said, and if I fall on the battlefield, you know, my family will know that I was serving a greater purpose. So I think it is true that the idea of adventure and seeing the world was certainly an element for a lot of these blokes, but we should also do them the service of recognizing that they also knew what they were getting in for when they put on a uniform and picked up a gun.
Yes. Yes, we're speaking with Matt McLaughlin from McLaughlin Battleground Tours about the famous Albert Jacka. And I guess after Albert was, I mean, he was used in numerous enlisting, you know, posters and featured regularly in newspapers and everything, once that his sporting prowess and his VC were known of. And then Albert Jacka, after Gallipoli, Matt, he went to the Western Front and was twice more decorated. What happened there?
Yeah, and some controversy here, Greg. And I'm always in two minds how I think about Jacka. So probably the toughest fight Jacka was ever involved in, and from his own admission as well, was the fight at Pozieres in 1916. So he was fighting at Pozieres, the most costly battle in Australian military history. And the story is that and it's been somewhat disputed, and I know Peter Fitzsimons is going to dispute this in his latest book. I was discussing with him and he's taking a different angle. But the official story is that Jacka was occupying a trench with his men. He was a captain by this stage, and he was in charge of a section of Australian trench that they were holding. And he was down in a dugout with some of his men, and there was a sentry up in the trench, and the Germans counterattacked and captured the trench, and Jacka's men were wounded, and Jacka himself was wounded. But then he launched a sort of a one-man offensive against the Germans and took the trench back and fought tooth and nail with the Germans, and was apparently wounded 7 times during the course of the day, but eventually led this huge one-man battle just about, which retook the trench and saved the day. The controversy comes from the fact that the accounts that I've read said that his commanding officers asked why he was down in the dugout in the first place, that why wasn't he up in the trench, you know, keeping a better lookout, and Jacka had a habit of ticking off his superiors. And so he said that action, Jacka himself said that action was much tougher than anything he did at Gallipoli, and yet he received a military cross for that instead of a second Victoria Cross. And a lot of people have argued that was a great injustice, that he should have received a Victoria Cross. And I think under different circumstances, and a different person may have received a Victoria Cross for that action. But he received a military cross, which is no mean feat. That's a pretty high award in itself. Mm. And then at Bullecourt, the following year in 1917, Jacka reconnoitred forward of his battalion and personally captured a German officer and another man and brought them into the lines and roughed them up a bit and took them back and brought them in to be interrogated. And the German officer complained that he'd been a bit roughly handled by Jacka when he was captured. And the Aussie who was interrogating him said, "Mate, you're lucky you're alive. You don't realise who that was that brought you in." And for that action, Jacka received a second military cross. So we say a bar to his military cross. So he ended the war with a Victoria Cross and two military Victory Crosses and a range of other awards. So some people have gone so far as to say he was the man who should have won three Victoria Crosses. I think that's a little bit over the top, but it's certainly debatable that that second action at Pozieres, for which he received the Military Cross, it can be argued that he may have been worthy of a Victoria Cross for that action as well.
Yeah, well described, and further illumination on the character and man of Albert Jacka. And I guess, having looked at his life too, and you've just touched on this too, Matt, about basically Albert Jacka could have, he was a captain, but he could have gone on to a higher rank if not for the his habit of peeing off the his seniors.
Yeah, there seems to be something there, Greg, that hasn't been fully explored. And I don't actually know if Peter Fitzsimons' book will address it in more detail, but there was something there, but that prevented his rise through the ranks. He rose up pretty quickly. He started as a private. He rose up very quickly, relatively quickly, to become a captain, but that was as far as he went, even after earning a military cross at Pozieres and then another one in 1917. You know, so he was a captain by 1916 and still fought, for the rest of the war on and off. And yet, never went past captain. So there certainly seemed to be something stopping him from advancing there. And the general accepted belief is that that he just annoyed his superiors so much. He was so hard to get on with that they couldn't see him rising any further. But he's just a fascinating story. And even later in life, he became mayor of St Kilda after the war and was
That's
always a
right.
proud Victorian. Became mayor of St Kilda, and but he always struggled from those war wounds that he'd received. I think particularly at Pozieres, he'd been pretty badly knocked around, and I think he was in pain for the rest of his life. And then in the 1930s, as only a very young man, still in his 30s, he succumbed to those war wounds and died in Melbourne,
Yes, he went to the
aged
Caulfield
only in his
Hospital, didn't
30s.
he, or?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, so he went to the repatriation hospital there, and then sadly passed away,
Oh, jeez. Well, I used to
only
live
in his
just
late
around the corner
30s.
from that. Yeah, just
Well, there you go.
it's
And I mean,
touching to.
the part that strikes me most about Albert Jacka is probably those last moments of his life and his last words that he said to his father was, "I'm still fighting, Dad." So that's something that's always stuck with me as well through the years. So, just a fascinating man.
What a character. And I guess the German officer and the German soldier were lucky, because of course being roughly handled by Albert Jacka was no mean feat. And yeah, you wouldn't want to be on the receiving end, Matt.
No, he'd certainly killed a lot of men. There was no question about
Jeez.
that. They were lucky that Jacka recognised that having an officer as a prisoner was such a valuable prize for the Australians, because otherwise I'm sure he would have been dispatched pretty swiftly by Jacka. But Jacka was smart enough to realise the intelligence that could come from a German officer. So he took him in hand and handed him over to the authorities. But yes, I think that that man could count himself as very lucky that he survived the war.
That's right. That's right. And of course, too, we hope that Peter Fitzsimmons' new book on Albert Jacka shines a bit more light on that, and I'm sure it will, as Peter's books do have a habit of doing so. And I guess to add to the whole thing about Albert Jacka too, Matt McLaughlin, he started off his working life as a labourer. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. A common working man, and made his way up through the ranks. And then he was a businessman after he came back from the war. But sadly, his businesses failed during the Depression, as many First World War veterans discovered that the land fit for heroes that we said that we would build for them didn't quite materialize. And it's a whole fascinating chapter of the First World War story that I think needs to be told in more detail. Is life for these men when they came home? And Jack is a great example of that. He went on to, as we said, he had quite a prestigious career as mayor of St Kilda and running his own businesses. But then the Great Depression hit, and obviously took the wind out of his sails. And for a lot of men who came home, adjusting back to civilian life after everything that they'd been through was very, very difficult. And I've come across stories of suicides, of homelessness, alcoholism, family abuse. It's a pretty tough story to hear after we've spent so much time idolizing these men for what they achieved on the battlefield. But I think we owe it to them and to their families and to the history to explore that a little bit more, and to realize that Australia didn't do a very good job of welcoming these blokes back, and really did let them down in so many ways when they came home. So that's a Jack is probably a bit representative of that, and sadly it's a story we hear all too often.
Yes, indeed. We do owe a debt of gratitude. And I guess from personal experience too, Matt, if I may say this, my father fought in World War II and did suffer some emotional issues, not on a grand scale, but certainly that became you became aware of that during his life. And I guess we never really gave thanks enough to what he had done. But that's on a personal level, and your speaking about that raises that memory for me. So I guess also with Albert Jacka being mayor, when you walk around the corridors of the St Kilda Town Hall and things like that, the man is still there, I guess. He's left this legacy of service in public and in warfare.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's buried in St Kilda Cemetery. So I've never actually been down to visit his grave. I certainly should do that. But if you are in Melbourne and heading to St Kilda, call in at the cemetery and pay your respects to Albert Jacka because a great bloke. And as you touched on there on your personal account with your dad, thank you for sharing that. But I think that's as we said, all too common that we're great at turning civilians into soldiers, but we're pretty poor at turning soldiers back into civilians and helping them integrate with their life. And it's something that even we've seen after more recent wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, just the struggle with people coming back. We seem a bit better with it now. We seem to be improving now and having more services in place and more support for them. But I tell you what, there's been some times after the First World War, Second World War, Vietnam, obviously, and even the more recent conflicts where we haven't really done our best to help these veterans. So, glad to see that it's changing somewhat now, and we seem to be learning those lessons a bit more.
Yes, well said, Matt McLaughlin, too. And it's something that you become aware of, and hopefully things can continue to improve on behalf of the veterans who have fought for the country. I guess, too, that is something that we need to look at future. But we'll be back, obviously, to talk again before Anzac Day. And we do welcome you, as always, for being on the Last Post radio show, Matt McLaughlin from Matt McLaughlin's Battleground Tours. And we would like to say that, obviously, we welcome your column in the Last Post magazine as well, too, Matt.
Yeah, thank you, Greg. I enjoy writing it. I was just working on the latest one when we were chatting, actually talking about this topic again in a bit more detail about the Sportsman's 1000, the battalion that Jacka helped to raise, and how Jacka was portrayed as this sporting giant and also a giant on the battlefield as well. So it's a fascinating chapter. So I always love talking about it and writing about it in the column for the magazine. So look out for that coming out very soon.
Well, what a great life you've got, Matt McLaughlin. That's amazing, too, to be delving into the history of these amazing Australians and serving this as a history lesson, too, for not only young people, but people of all ages throughout the country. So we thank you very much, and we look forward to speaking to you again, Matt McLaughlin, on the Last Post radio show.
Thanks, Greg. I appreciate it.
You're listening to Greg T. Ross and the Last Post radio show on Captivate, Apple, and Spotify.